Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I explore the subject of fame by talking to people who've experienced it themselves and ask them how it has affected their own journey as well as the lives of those around them. My guest today is musician, writer and actress Rebecca Lucy Taylor. Rebecca was lead singer of Sheffield indie band Slow Club. Forming in 2006, the band toured the world and released four critically acclaimed albums. In December 2019, a documentary called Our Most Brilliant Friends came out, charting the band's troubled final tour together, which has been described as an intimate and unflinchingly honest portrait of the band. In 2017, Rebecca decided to break out on her own and start an experimental pop project, thank you Wikipedia, called Self Esteem. The debut album, Compliments Please, was released in March 2019 and saw Self Esteem nominated for the Best Breakthrough Act at the Q Awards that year. Rebecca has also moved into writing for stage and screen and has been developing a play for the Almeida Theatre and has appeared on TV shows including Sunday Brunch, The Alan Jones Show and House of Fools. So, a very busy woman. Let's give a huge Almost Famous welcome to Rebecca Lucy Taylor. Rebecca, hi.
Hi. That was very good.
Thank you. I should say, first off, Rebecca and I have known each other for years. Very, very, very good, amazing, talented, brilliant friend of mine. I just said before we started recording that I've never been so shy doing one of these, and I feel like it's something we should probably talk about. Why is that? How does that even work?
Because I think that you're still in love with me. That's fine.
It's definitely heart-based. There can be nothing else.
And I'd make most men feel like this, I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid about it. Being open about it is the key. I always ask my guests, how was your intro? Did I miss anything out?
No, it was cool. It's cute that House of Fools, the two lines that I got cut from House of Fools made it in. You can see me revving up for my line in it as well. I'm like, come on, first paid acting job, BBC, yeah, give it to me. And then it cuts.
Well, listen, Rebecca, as you well know, I texted you today saying, which TV shows have you been on? And you did write that. So I then included it.
I was a joke and now he's made the intro. But it is true. I got £500 in a week's work.
Well, that is some sweet, sweet dollar there. And it's Vic and Bob. That's a very credible TV thing to have been on.
Yeah, I show off about it still.
This is our first, Almost Famous' first remote recording. I'm in my open plan kitchen living room in Walthamstow, obviously due to COVID-19. How are you? How's your isolation? Where are you? Tell us all about it. What's going on?
I'm in my childhood bedroom in Sheffield.
Describe it.
It's just the walls are thick with my tantrums, my sadness, my woes, my growing pains. I can't sleep. No, it's fine. And I'm glad I got up here when I did, because I was in LA when it all kicked off. Flew back sort of quickly because I was scared of getting stuck out there. And then I got to London and didn't really want to get stuck in there. I live in like quite a small flat with housemates and like no outdoor bit, so yeah, I felt like I got the last train out of town. Yeah. And I've been up here since, but I'm actually like, it's just like one of those things, like I'm having a perfectly okay time. I'm pretty socially awkward and have quite a lot of stress around having to go to things anyway, so if you take out all the, you know, thousands of deaths and devastation, I'm fine with this. But obviously, it's awful, and I would quite like it to be over.
Yeah. How do you think it's, realistically, how do you think it's going to affect your music, your career?
Yeah, I mean, I am trying not to think about it, really. I was lucky because, like, you go in cycles, so sort of, like, write an album, make it, you get it in the can like 6 months before it comes out, and then that 6 months is like videos, photo shoots, loads of like gubbins where you're trying to work out what it'll be live, and so and then it comes out, and then you have to like do a good year and a bit of touring. And I was just at the end of that for my first album anyway, going into the writing, you know, being hunkered down a bit anyway, section of album two. So yeah, if this had happened last year when my, you know, absolute life's work had like careered towards this March 1st release date, yeah, I don't bear thinking about, to be honest. But so yeah, I mean, in terms of day to day, this is okay, and I'm just doing the same amount of work as I would be doing anyway, just writing. But like next year was meant to be my big festival year, like all these things got come into play. I think the music industry will really struggle, but I keep reading those hopeful articles about how it will struggle like in a good way, and it'll mean restructuring of how people make money from it, because it's a really shy industry. Like the odds are, you're as the artist, like you're earning the least all the time. So there's loads. It's not like it was a glistening, beautiful, bountiful way of life anyway for me.
Yeah, I mean, my parents were both musicians and never had to deal with the realities of, and my brother was as well, the realities of what music is now in terms of how little you make because everything's being downloaded and streamed, compared to, you know, even though my mum only had like one number two single, dare I say it, she made enough money off that. She made enough money off that genuinely to probably put me through school. So it's different.
Yeah, I go through this all the time. Like, had I written what I've written and sort of performed how I have 20 years ago, I'd probably be successful and have plenty of money. I started making music the. Felt like the year like iTunes came out and iPods became something that everyone had. So I've never been in the industry when it's been you make loads of cash and everyone's having a fantastic time and piles of cocaine. Like, it's been really, I had to always do it for the love of doing it, not because I thought I was gonna make loads of money and swim in it.
And in a way, do you ever think that it's almost better that you didn't have a taste of that? So say the first couple of years had been that, and then suddenly it dropped off a cliff.
Oh, big time. Like, I measure all of it by, there's so many people I know, so many people have made music. Very few that started when I started are still doing it now. I mean, it's because it is ultimately really futile, and logically you start to feel a bit just so exhausted by it. And it gets the better of me a lot, like it's a bit bane of my life, but I still feel like there's a sort of hunger in me and something to say. But yeah, I saw a lot of bands when Slow Club first started. We toured with hell of a lot of bands that had like really nice vans and four crew members, and they were like living it up. And you know, all of them don't exist anymore because it got taken away. So I always just sort of joke. It's not really a joke, it's like the absolute truth is that Slow Club, we were always on this very, very gentle climb upwards. And we never actually like bombed back down ever, but we never hit any heights. But I've just been this like snail pace, gradual climb. And I feel like self-esteem sort of carried on where I left off. And I see now, after loads of therapy, that that's been a much better thing for me than any sort of like mega stardom to fall from, because it, I don't know, keeps me getting out of bed and keeps me wanting to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, keeps you hungry, like you said. Okay, so I ask every guest we have this. I feel like I know what you're going to say, but I'm very intrigued by it. Are you famous, Rebecca Lucy Taylor?
Absolutely not. To a very small niche amount of people.
But why isn't that fame, though? Do you know what I mean? So in my head, my argument straight away was going to be, well, I'd argue that in Sheffield, and certainly amongst the kind of indie fraternity of the last decade or so, then absolutely you're, you know, not only famous but someone people probably aspire to be or look up to or definitely want to sleep with. So
yeah.
So if you're not famous, or you can't describe yourself as famous, then what is fame?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's something that I keep coming up against. Personally, I ask myself a lot. My management asked me, like, what is it you want? Like, I think it's a real misconception about me that I want to be famous. I want to be, like, very successful. And I want to be able to... all the things I want to do, that's like a joke about, like, I want to be on Strictly Come Dancing and things. I would clean up. Like, I would just be so good at it. Like, that's what pisses me off, is there's certainly in indie music, there's a level of notoriety can get to where you probably would get booked on TV shows and things like that. And it's not that I'm genuinely, I don't want to be papped in the supermarket or anything like that, but there's just this whole sort of circuit that I know I would be brilliant on and I'd enjoy loads and I'd get paid. Like, it so the sort of goal is to get to a level that would mean I can enjoy being, you know, opportunities that would come with being known a little bit more. Just because I love to work and I'm adaptable and I really enjoy it. And that was born really out of when I was in a band with somebody else who really hated all that sort of thing. It was quite hard to, even in interviews, I enjoy him and I was good at him, and having to sort of squash that about myself for so many years, like more than ever, I'm like, let me just be on stuff and good at it. I don't know. I can't really. It's a big question all the time. Like, what? Why do I want it so bad? And I don't really have an answer.
Yeah, you've talked in doing my prep for this, Rebecca. You've talked in quite a few interviews about using the term "making it," and actually, that's a term that pretty much all my musician friends from down the years who've been in bands or been singers or whatever have talked about making it. Is that what you're talking about then? Making it, not necessarily being fame, but being successful at what you do so much so that it opens doors for you to do potentially other creative stuff that you have in your head?
Yeah, big time. And like, I mean, the only music TV show you can get on, apart from Jules Holland, that rarely is shooting anymore, is Sunday Brunch. And I've been on it twice and I'll probably go on it again. It's like, there's no music industry got so like the just top of pops when CD UK, all those things that were bands were on those shows, they're all gone. I don't really get it because nothing really replaced it. Like, but people just digest music when they want, in the way they want to. And so all you can do is make it as small as possible. So I'm like, right, well, what? But like, as small as possible in your brain. So I go, every time I'm getting carried away, I'm like, I see Rita Ora on something and I'm like, why isn't that not me? And like, you know, I genuinely do have a bit of a complex about those sort of pop girls that are really famous, like, bother me because I don't get it. but then I have to go, okay, well, hang on, why am I doing this and what do I love about it? And it is the making and the creating and the art of it. It isn't having my makeup done and being on the telly, like, but there's a big, like, Veruca Salt part of me or whatever that's like, I want that.
Yeah.
But I genuinely can't say it's because I want to be really famous. It's because I just enjoy that shit. I love it. I love how daft it all is.
Yeah, and then, but also it's full circle because being able to be on things like that would then bring more people to listen to your music.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, you're talking to me when I haven't... I'd love to have a very, like, nice, succinct end to this chat, which is like that you can wrap up with a bow and be like, and I've had so much therapy that I can absolutely say I'm calm and okay about all this. But I'm trying to be. I've identified that this is the problem with my mental health a lot of the time, is I make art, I perform it, I put it out, I don't get much money back, and I don't grow in terms of profile. So what shall I do? Shall I stop doing it? No. So how do I feel okay about it? I don't know yet.
But it's not that you don't grow in profile, because you absolutely do grow in profile all the time and you're getting bigger, but are you naturally saying that you don't get the jump in profile that you want?
Yeah, I guess so. That's what I mean. I don't know what to say. And I'm wary of sounding like a little bitter, like old cow, which I am, but I don't want to sound like one. yeah, I just have to bring it back to the art. And I think it's the expectation of people around me as well. Like, I got to the end of the campaign for the last record, and I felt really relieved to have finally been seen and listened to, and my point of view was not only like had been allowed to happen, but also people liked it, and I felt amazing. But you know, didn't sell many records, and the sort of posh record label I'm on had to like think twice about doing my next record and things like that. And it was just this horrible like dragging the rug from underneath me moment. But I look at like performance artists and things like that, and like people that really, really fucking make art just because they need to make art and because that's their lives. And there's a big part of me that feels like that, and I just have to remind myself of it.
And also, I wonder if in reality, when we're having this conversation, which is when you are literally isolated away from the stuff that you want to be doing, means that it's natural that to some degree you're not getting the regular kind of boosts of endorphins from being in the studio writing a new song because you know you have to keep them going for the second album, stuff like that. And so it's easier to think maybe in a bit more half glass empty mode at the moment.
Oh yeah, and you know how predisposed to that glass being half empty I am. Like and I have to have like perspective, and when I have a moment of that, I think I'm really proud of myself and really happy. And
yeah,
but it's a weird time. Certainly making the next record is a really weird headspace, because there's this bit of you that's like, well, I've got this vision for what I want to carry on in this vein, but I want to tweak this and I want to say this here. But then there's 15 people in an office boardroom wanting you to write a massive single that will make everyone loads of money, and I don't respond well under that pressure.
Yeah.
But it's definitely like an old A&R trick to, no matter what, even if you've got five singles, they say it again about now, because you know it's always good. But I try every time I write a song, I'm trying to write a massive global phenomenon. But I just have to go, you don't need to say that to me, lads. I'm trying. Just let's have a blanket, like, everyone know that's what I'm doing.
That's actually really refreshing to hear, though, because actually I think there are so many, I mean, maybe I've been hanging out with the wrong musicians over my life, but there are so many who would just be like, oh, it would be so easy to write something, you know, poppy and you know, easily listenable to, or what I think we would call a banger in these days. Let's try and do something more credible and cool and whatever. And I think it's, you know, it's refreshing to hear you openly say, and this is one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on as well, is someone who openly is just like, yeah, I want to be big, I want to be huge, and I want to do it in this quite populist way.
Yeah, but see, now this new thing is happening with that, where that is how I feel. And certainly when I was in a band with you know, another person who didn't want that at all, and the authenticity of musicianship was paramount, and me wanting to write pop songs in that environment was, you know, it had its own challenges, and I sort of had my own little wins here and there, and though whereas now, uncompromised, this weird thing is happening where my version of what pop is still isn't pop. And I'm actually like, I'm the indie guy in this scenario, because I still have like some of my ideas on, they're not radio, you know, this constant thing with it's not radio, not going to get played on Radio 1. And when I try and write something that would be played on Radio 1, I do feel like weird and uncomfortable. But I mean, who knows? I'm on the edge of trying it out as a experiment, but also there is a part of me that can't quite do it. So yeah, it's very confusing, and fuck knows.
Yeah, but I mean,
you've got to stay true to yourself to some extent when you're not making any money. Like, that's the major change I've felt, is all the how uncomfortable it all is, how sort of detrimental to your mental health it is, how hard touring is, how shit it is. It all goes away when you stood on that stage during whatever you created and wanted. And now I am doing that as self-esteem. I can handle how crap it all is. But in Slow Club, I used, you know, I resented every single minute of my day. And like, that still does apply. If I wrote like some really simple pop by numbers song that had a big hit with, would I be happy? Probably, but
I mean, it would be short term happiness, but there'd be a chip on your shoulder about it not having been what you creatively wanted to do, I suppose.
Yeah, I've had like people with way bigger careers than me really loved my record and got in touch, and I've therefore had conversations with them, and I've had these very sort of humbling conversations about how, you know, and they've got what I want so bad, and they're not happy, or they're not creatively fulfilled and totally, and things like that. And that taught me a lot.
Yeah.
The end of this is always just carry on.
Yeah.
Doing what you're doing. And I guess I'm privileged because people will listen to what I make. It might not be like thousands and thousands of people, but at least there are some of them.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, just because we keep cropping up to mental health and stuff, and you're giving us a great picture of how your stage of your career or the different peaks and troughs of your career affect your mental health. I wonder how you think, if it did go best case scenario, so, you know, millions of people were listening to your music, how do you think then the fame that would bring to you would affect you, Rebecca, as a person in your mental health? Do you think you'd be able to handle it?
No, not
bleak.
Well, look, who knows? I can handle things a lot better than I used to. So, you know, I could up my therapy to twice a week because I'd be so famous. Yeah, it is a weird link between fame and money, sort of come hand in hand for me. And I always think, well, I would be all right because I'd be able to, all the things.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
That stressed me out. Could you throw cash at it? I don't know. I don't know, because I can already tell, like, that a major thing that I learn weekly about myself is that because I started making music when I was like 16, straight out of school, I didn't go to uni, I didn't do anything, I went straight into being in a band. I've never had a moment, I've never like clocked out. Like, I don't know what relaxing is. I don't know. I'm too intertwined with it. Everything about, like, if I meet somebody new that I fancy, I instantly think, you know, I'll do the blah, blah, blahs. And then I think, can't wait for them to come and see me play a gig, and I'll really seal the deal with that, you know. And it's so unhealthy and bad, because I'm just always putting my what's the word, Barnaby, you know,
you're always putting your, I was too busy thinking about how that really does work.
I know, but it's that though, because it's an argument for it being not me, isn't it? Like, who wants to like actually fall in love with actual me? Very few people.
But that's an important question, I think, is to how much what people see of you on stage is a persona compared to the real you. Now, obviously, in terms of performance, you're putting on a show, so there's an element of an extended version of you or a bigger version of you, but also it's talking, it's singing your lyrics and your song, so it's obviously a great deal of you as well.
Yeah, and I mean, this is what I'm trying to unpick at the minute, is I mean, that's my USP, is like my lyrics are very personal, and I don't like drown things in metaphor. All the way everything looks is very from my brain and all the rest of it. And I, yeah, there isn't a difference between the persona and me, really. But I guess that self-esteem, me on stage and like a little in an outfit dancing and singing and sort of vaguely seeming like I've got flair and like a slickness to me that just doesn't exist in my actual life. I don't know.
But in terms of what you said, and you know, meeting people you fancy and stuff, I think, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but it's like I would dream about being in a position where I could try and say to a girl, oh, come and watch me do stand-up, and then they'll fancy me more at the end. I don't think that's a negative in any way.
And my therapist does.
Well, I'm not. That's why I'm not a therapist.
I know, but I sit there and I go, no, I think it's fine. Like, but she's got a point. She has. Like, there's.
But that's what you do. It's the equivalent of meeting, you know, of a normal person with an office job meeting someone in the office and impressing them in a board meeting. God, that sounds so bleak.
Her point is, you know, work should be something you clock out of, and you go right home and you relax and you be yourself. Like, and I've never, ever, once done that in my adult life.
Because you're an artist, Rebecca. That's why.
And it's hell on earth. And I dream of not, like, I don't dream of it because I could go and just, you know, I could go and do it. But like, I wonder if my mental health would have been easier to get to grips with had I had a job and, you know, had a career path and had holidays and things like that. Like, I wonder. And it's all grass is greener shit, isn't it? Like, and it's too late for me and I'm not going to change it, but it does, the sort of, the problems I've faced in my head, there's an argument for them being exacerbated by this career. But
I mean, even in the time we've known each other, which must be like at least 6 or 7 years, I mean, you can tell me to edit this out if you don't want me to show the realities of the dream. But we both had like office jobs that we've hated, like, or you've done, I think, some temping. You've definitely been in, you've definitely been in a theatrical performance over a period of time that wasn't necessarily what you wanted to do, which was like a money job. So you've had experience of both sides. And presumably when you do those things, you're just desperate to be being paid and appreciated for actually what you love doing or what you're best at, which is your music.
Yes, but in a way, like when I was a PA, like the world's worst PA in London by a mile.
That's right, you were PA. You weren't temping at all. That was, I was wrong. I apologize.
I don't get any office work because they're like, what have you done? I'm like, I did very little, nothing. IT at GCSE, and I can't count, so I don't usually get those jobs. but when I was a PA, even though it was like, I found it difficult after the first sort of few weeks or so. I don't know if this should be in the podcast, but I was like a popular person on set. I made people laugh, and I was like a normal person, and there was nothing remarkable about me, but people liked me, and then that was like a, now like probably rose tinted, but that was a really good example of, mentally, was that was quite healthy for me in a way.
That's definitely rose-tinted spectacles. And I also, in my opinion, but I also think the reason people liked you wasn't because you weren't remarkable. It was because compared to them, you were remarkable because you were funny and you were yourself.
Yeah, but none of them were like, a few of them would be like, what's your band called again? And they Google it. And then, you know, that, and I would feel this major relief that they were going to go and look at what I do. Because that gives me like, it felt like it gave me like 20 points more. Hmm. That's shit, Barnaby. You can't deny that's not like healthy mentally. Or do you think it just is? And I should shut up.
Well, I can't say it just is because your therapist says it's not. And they, I think, know more than I do. I guess the reality of it is it's her view on how it affects you personally. Maybe it's more right or wrong. Maybe it's more right for somebody else. I don't know. But I think it's just it feels to me like an extension of your creativity. And the fact that you're, as I like, an artist and creative and need and have chosen to go down a route where you need affirmation, as everybody who I've interviewed on this does, and that's why they've got into the career they've got into. So why would you not seek that out? That's what you need to keep going with your art and to keep creating, which then at the end of each day, once you've created something, that's how you fall asleep at night.
I think there's a sort of compromise on this theory that I need to find, definitely, because I do, why do I do it? I enjoy it. I can remember the first time I sang on stage and could tell that people were sort of like really into it or whatever. Like it was at school and the first time I sang, and I can just, you know, I can remember every single moment of that. And life was never the same after that. And I guess that's the addiction to being impressive or something.
What were you singing?
You do like GCSE music, you play an instrument as your part, big percentage, like a quarter of it is playing an instrument. And I was playing the drums, and then the music teacher was like, sort of said, oh, it's a lot easier to get points for the, you know, singing show songs than playing these drum patterns really perfectly. So I sang a song from Fame. Fame,
which
the
one?
Movie. It's called Out Here on My Own.
Do you remember every lyric even today?
Yeah, of course.
Excellent.
And I still slay it to this day. But yeah, the music teacher, he was like, oh my God, you have to do this. Oh my God. And then from then on, it was like, I was always in, you know, I was the lead in all the plays and I did loads of outdrawn and it was all, yeah. And I'd been like a weirdo, shy kid before that. And
that's actually a really important point because you had a teacher who inspired you and motivated you just by telling you were great. And more importantly than that, it was obviously very believable because in my head, in terms of, you know, I was looking back at things I did, little moments like that. I think all I would have needed was somebody to tell me that to really try and push on a lot earlier in terms of what I wanted to do. I mean, either that or I was just shit. But the importance of having someone like that, I think shouldn't be underestimated.
No, and Mr. Wright, I still to this day, like I thank him and my albums and things because the school I was at was, I was just dead lucky. It was like the music department was like, there was like now, because I'm, my friends are teachers and things like that, and they're cool, or they're like maverick in their style or something. Like I can see now that they were, him and this other teacher called Mrs. Moran were just fucking cool people who had like a sense of humor and they wanted to do interesting stuff, and you know, they were very inspiring and also really nurtured me and like, yeah, proper, like, and it was like a safe thing. And also weirdly at my school, like doing choir and doing shows and stuff, that was like the cool thing to do. That wasn't like lame, like everyone wanted to do it. It was like pretty intense.
But it was just a normal school. It wasn't a drama school or anything.
Nah. For some reason, it's just those few teachers that had, they were good. And also drumming was a big part of my life. So I did like, ducked out loads of lessons to go and move the drum kit. That was like, all I was doing was just playing it. And I got into like music early, like, and and that became my identity, which saves you a lot of hassle, I think.
Obviously, the first series of this was about speaking to famous people's family members and asking how it affected them. I want to know how you being a musician and striving for success has affected your family. Have any of your siblings tried to do anything similar? And what do your parents think of your career?
No, there's nobody else striving to do anything. Everyone else in my family is very doing things in the right way and right in them inverted whatever's.
But you mean proper jobs?
Proper jobs, families, you know, car, people, everyone can drive. I can't drive.
Is that, that's the real way of deciding I'm whether someone's an adult or not.
Yeah, it shocks me. I'm like, how do you do this? Yeah, and it's been like, I sort of put words in my parents' mouth a bit about it. I think I've been like, you wish I was normal, but they don't. They just want me to be all right. And I think they're a lot happier now. I'm solo and doing things under my steam because they had to watch me sort of feel very frustrated and upset a lot, you know, and now they sort of see that less. So I think that's been good. No one else does anything and no one really gets it. And I sort of don't like talking about it at like Christmas and stuff because this is a really weird thing that happens. And I wonder if like the actual famous people you've interviewed have this, but like, you feel really stupid talking about what you do for a living because you instantly feel like you're showing off or like you're being grand. And this is one of my worst things is when someone else goes like, oh, my life's really boring compared to yours. Oh, I just do this. And I can't bear that when people do that. My blood just like curdles. I'm like, no, like your life isn't boring. Like mine is, like, I can't. And you just have this like, I'm shit. No, I'm shitter.
Not only do I know what you mean, because I feel the same, but then also when I try and think about it logically, I really fucking hate the people who love talking about what they do. And I hate them so much more than I feel awkward about talking about my, you know, being a writer or a stand-up or something creative where I'm not well known for it or whatever, that I kind of try and tally it up when I can be logical and just say, at least I'm not one of those suits who's talking about endlessly how amazing his life is and name dropping all the you know, the big deals he's done or whatever.
Totally. Yeah. And also I'm quite like get quite nervy in social situations, and if there's a silence, I don't know what to do. So I'm like, and like sometimes I can't help, I've got like a bit more shit to say about something I've done, and but I can't bear it. And I'm like, just shut up. Yeah, it's awful because I'm like, well, I'll fill it. I'll talk about something I've been doing because, yeah, like, I hate it about myself.
That's because you're a performer and you don't. Yeah, you're filling the dead air. That's a natural instinct. You're a comedian, for goodness sake. You've alluded to this a little bit, but I wonder how being a musician and striving for success has affected, in your mind, your personal relationships and that side of it. I guess with you specifically, because we know each other, I feel more comfortable to say, you know, partners, boyfriends, long-term loves, etc.
Yeah, no, I sort of sailed close to the wind a few times with people and could have gone for it, but there's this horrible yearning in me that I think it's because I've always been leaving, like I've never lived anywhere that long, and I crave it and I'd love it, and one day maybe it'll happen for me. But I can see now it was like square peg round hole sort of shit for ages, and sort of still is, and it's nobody's fault, and it's also not my fault. Like I write a lot about it. A lot of my work is about that, like, don't feel bad that you're not doing what everyone else seems to be doing. And I see it on my shows a lot. I see a lot of girls at my shows that are obviously like not, they're in their 30s, and you can tell that they've had this weight of like, whoa, when are you going to meet someone, hanging over them. And I guess everything I make has an air of saying, well, fuck you, I'm going to do it when I fancy it. And they really love that and respond to it and can tell they feel like really grateful for it. So yeah, as much as I'd love to meet somebody and settle down in all the normal ways, I hold the fact that I haven't really dear now, and think it's I sort of feel a bit of I want to protest for people. Like, who says you have to have all these things by a certain age, and who says that will be what happiness is for you? Like, it's hard though, because I've also, it's still ingrained all in my fibers to be like, oh, someone likes me and they want to love me forever. Nice one. Because it's never that. I'm like, okay, for 6 months. Then I'm like, oh, God, don't want me.
I was just going to say, is there an argument that your music wouldn't be as good if you were in a long-term relationship and, you know, conforming to societal norms?
Apparently, yes, there's an argument for that. I hate having that argument because it makes me very worried. Because I don't want to sabotage my life or my work. But maybe I do and I don't notice. I'm certainly not trying to consciously. But I think it's something I'm passionate about is not, it's like as a woman, like, God, what's drilled into you that you should want and should have is insane. And I know men get it as well, but I think it's like the volume is turned up for a woman from an earlier age.
Sure.
And it's not fair.
No, it's not.
And maybe that's what's making me reject when someone sort of gives me all these things that I might want. And maybe it's my commitment to being queen of the bachelorettes that sabotages it. Who knows?
I'd like to see you on the bachelorette. I'm just going to do some quick fire. So pithy answers and then one more question and that's it. Okay. I'm going to use for these questions, because you said you don't think you're famous, I'm going to use the term in the public eye, because you're definitely that, okay? So what's the best thing about being in the public eye?
Being able to like write something and by the end of the day know that someone would give a shit. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's great. Answer? Perfect. What's the worst thing about it?
Having to be watch what I eat.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's a bad answer.
Okay, go again.
Don't say that. That's not good. The worst thing about
You've already said it, and I'm not going to edit it out. So you better better it here.
Oh, fuck's sake! Not being able to clock off, clock out of workness of it.
What advice would you give to someone who strives to have a career like yours?
Don't. No. Be true. Be authentic and true. Say what you mean. Don't shroud things in a million metaphors.
Okay.
Get to the chorus quick.
Yes, very good. Very good advice. Do you remember the first time you were recognised and how did that feel?
I don't remember the exact first time. It's always pretty fun, but now and again it's been quite terrifying, like strange older men coming up to me on the tube and stuff. I still don't like that.
Final question. Knowing all that it entails and with the benefit of hindsight, would you give up being in the public eye if you had the chance? So you'd get to have your whole life as it is, you'd just never be recognised by anyone.
I guess not.
Pithy. That's good, because the technology seems to be cutting out anyway. You were very pithy. You did what it said. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show. Is there anything you want to plug? Plug your music, tell them where to find it, which songs are the best, what they should go for, etc. Do it.
Well, there's a whole Slow Club back catalogue that I still make 20p from now and again. I've got my first record as a solo artist, Compliments Please, and that's on Spotify and all the rest of it. And I've got an EP coming out on the 1st of May called Cuddles Please, which is reworkings of a few of my songs and a cover version that I love. And hopefully when we're allowed to be in rooms together again, you can come and see me.
Yeah, definitely. So check out Self-Esteem, check out Cuddles Please, coming out soon, one of the greatest EP titles of all time. Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed it. Guys, please do press the subscribe button on Almost Famous. It really helps us. So if you do use Apple Podcasts, do press subscribe, leave us a comment, that would be great as well. And you can find us on Instagram at Almost Famous the Podcast, and on Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And thank you for listening, and apologies if there are any technical gremlins in there. What can I say? Coronavirus, fuck you. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.